Hey, this is Robert Rustler, known as the Rusty Dog, also known as the Bad Boy of Architecture. You're listening to Nightmare Junkhead Podcast.
In and out of your consciousness, like a bad dream you can't wake from, this is the Nightmare Junkhead Podcast, a horror podcast that knows revenge is a dish best served cold, but finds new life when warmed up by an air fryer. My name is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
And on today's episode, we're closing out off-brand April by closing out the 1980s as we make a pact with 1989's She-Devil. And whether you've written a romance novel or not, you can listen into our show. Simply search for Nightmare Junkhead wherever podcasts are played. Hit subscribe, and when we drop our latest episode, we'll download directly to your listening device of choice.
All up in your hellhole.
And you can actually find us raising hell out on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Nightmare Junk and on both Blue Sky and Facebook at Nightmare Junkhead, but it is only on that Book of Face, where we have an events tab, which leads to
shenanigans and cartoony comeuppance shenanigans.
And as this episode is going to be releasing on Friday, April 19th, if you find yourself in the Kansas City area, head on over to screenland.com, where they will have those cartoony comeuppance shenanigans taken care of
indoors.
Just for now.
Yep.
But again,
it's coming.
And I've seen the lineup.
It's coming.
It looks really good. But more importantly, the Friday this episode releases, our latest Friday Night Fright.
Yes. I can't wait to see this. I haven't seen this in a long time.
It's celebrating its 25th year.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did catch it in the theater.
Me too.
And it's one of those that I know has an increasing cult devotion.
Right.
As Rodman Flender's Idle Hands is one that, given the sawissance of recency,
right,
you can see where a lot of that started.
Well, plus it's got Seth Green. Who doesn't like Seth Green, right? And then it's got Jessica Alba.
Stop it.
But I'm just saying, you know, that's between that and Honey kind of introduced the world to Jessica Alba.
The Offspring.
And The Offspring. Gorily, The Offspring.
And a great single hand, a lot of good. This side of Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead 2, some amazing hand acting going on.
One-handed shenanigans.
It is actually, shenanigans are appropriate. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. But then looking forward and closing out our Friday Night Frights in April.
Don't make me drink alone. Don't make me drink alone.
A recent discovery for both of us. We covered it on the main feed probably about 2 years ago. And since then, has been in the vernacular.
Yep.
Has been at Screenland itself. I have seen, I think, at least two people run out one of the theaters, and they played Maw.
Maw's the shit. Maw is underrated the shit. It's like a good old school, like, hand that rocks the cradle.
Yes. You could find this pot. You'll probably find this in Thriller, but in our section, it's horror. But even just a few Friday Night Frights ago, someone came out, not at one of our screenings, but had a Maw shirt on.
Yep. Maw's the shit. Dude, Maw's one of those underrated gems.
As Idle Hands has found its cult audience over 25 years, Maw's recent, if there is the recency bias with it, but it feels still,
but it's great.
It's wonderful.
They get the assignment.
It's legit.
Mm-hmm.
It's legit. Now, the other repertory screenings that are actually going on the weekend of the 19th, one that's, and I've seen that, and I actually feel kind of, it's not guilt, but it's because I like everyone involved so much, and it was a staple of my childhood growing up. But have you seen the OG Scooby-Doo?
Yes, I have. I saw it in the theater.
It's fun, is it not?
I had a good time. It's James Gunn. I had a good time with it. I was pleasantly surprised because I loved me some Scooby-Doo back in the day. Loved me some Scooby-Doo from the monsters, because it was monsters. It was like my first Monster Hunter.
It's gateway horror.
It is, absolutely. Where man is the real monster.
Well, and it's also, if anything, it established your love of cartoon
shenanigans, which we'll get into later.
Yes, we will. So I'll probably have to make my way out to see that one. Now, another one that's, and I've seen that, And it's because of this filmmaker's work. It's intimidating. I've only seen the one, and that is Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain will be playing.
Mm-hmm.
I've only taken in Santa Sangre.
Me too.
I'm intimidated by his work, and I want to experience this in the theater proper.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as my timing lines up with this one, I will be checking that out.
I think for me, I might have to watch it at home first, because you know how I'm like, holy shit.
When something hits you right.
Right.
Now, that being said, you know the proper etiquette.
Right, but in the theater. But I think for something with such a reputation as this,
yeah.
I think I need to be in the home environment under the right circumstances to to truly imbibe that movie.
Appropriate choice of terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, continuing their filmmaking series here, or the filmmaker series, continuing with Wes Anderson.
I like Wes Anderson.
And this is another one that's, and I've seen that for me.
Oh, yeah?
The Life Aquatic.
Oh, yeah? You haven't seen it?
I still haven't taken that in yet.
It's charming.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's got great music. It's got Brazilian Bowie.
Yes.
It's got Dafoe. It's funny. I haven't seen it in a minute, but I remember really enjoying it. And, like, it's got, like, little Pee Wee Herman-esque animation in the middle of it. It's fun.
You said it. It's charming.
Charming.
Of course it's charming. It's forget it, genius. It's Wes Anderson. Of course it's charming. But then also a couple of contemporary flicks that are coming out. One that I know we're going to be talking eventually here, and I'm very much looking forward to this. And I have very much buried my head into my lap when the trailer has come up, when it's played theatrically, because I'm trying to go as blind as I can in with Abigail.
Oh, it looks fun. I'm ready for it. I like it. I like a good monster girl.
And we love the pedigree of the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
The premise. Like I'm
again,
not
it
saying...
looks fun.
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 That's we need what we're more looking fun for. Horror. We need more fun horror.
Well, you know what apparently is fun and weird is the the little film Sasquatch Sunset as produced by Ari Aster.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the trailer for it?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, technically, the Red Band trailer, guess what you get to break out?
Oh, dong? There's a Red Band trailer for it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And I don't even know if it's technically Red Band, but you do see Sasquatch dong.
Sasquatch dong? You see, like, what's that beef jerky he does?
Oh, good Lord.
Slim Jim. See Sasquatch Slim Jim.
But apparently, it has inspired a few walkouts, and it's because apparently it's the body humor of it.
So it's Sasquatch dick and fart jokes?
Apparently. I'm
curious.
Is
it a Sasquatch boner jam? Do they got to save the cave rec center?
Well, apparently Brian Corey has seen this one already.
Yeah?
And well, as one of the Sasquatch experts.
Right? He's our Sasquatchologist.
So yeah, ideally, we hope to see you, doing the pose out there.
Yeah, though.
With the Screenland film family. But genius, I'm talking film family.
Hey, belly.
We also have our own collection.
Sasquatch belly.
a group of cryptids, basically.
Right? Some Mothmans running around.
That we have at Patreon. And if they're on the Another Time or
Another Place
tier, they're going to have access to our Roadhouse commentary.
Roadhouse.
Which minimal Family Guy references.
Only at the beginning, and then that was it. We had to get it out of the way.
I actually, kind of looking back at it, I think it might be one of our more iffy commentaries.
I had a good time. I had a ball with it.
I think a good time was had. Now, that being said, regardless of your tier...
JCPenney's coming to town because of you guys. Ask anyone. They'll tell you.
They'll tell you. The appreciation that we have for him in that movie knows no bounds, as does my love for the Stray Cat Theater, which is another, if you have not checked out the Stray Cat Theater, you're doing Kansas City worship proper wrong in the cinema area. But you're going to hear my thoughts on The Witch Who Came from the Sea.
Ooh.
Think.
I'm intrigued.
Think A24
oh.
does Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Oh, well, Let's Scare probably, Jessica to Death already is A24.
I knew nothing about the movie. Had a blast with it. Future Greg wasn't there, so I didn't have to worry about that. Snake Arm Lady wasn't there. I had a blast with it. It's one of those that, like I said, the best you can do on a Friday night is to start at Stray Cat and end at Screenland. I've taken in both Basket Case and Pieces.
Oh.
in one evening.
Bravo.
Thanks to that. And I just, again, love the Stray Cat Theater. So if you'd like to have access to that and so much more, head on over to patreon.com/nightmarejunkhead. Actually, technically this month, we kind of have representations of all the tiers.
Yeah. We got a lot of good stuff out there.
We did the request and review with Deep Red.
That was a lot of fun.
Always save room for Jallo.
Mm-hmm. And watch out for crazy British kids.
And just a lot of sing-song.
Yes.
Obviously, the commentary, we went stayed with off-brand April mm-hmm. with that one. And it should be noted, we will be talking Abigail.
Yes.
In the next week.
Uh-huh. That's going to be fun.
Fun. Fun is the through line, at least so far with off-brand April.
I'm digging it.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans abound.
Would be another word I would also use.
Absolutely.
And I think, if anything, from 1986 with Running Scared,
mm-hmm.
which was my contribution to off-brand April, that was your first time viewing, I had not seen it in 15-plus years, I think is safe, to last week, something that was, again, a recent find for both of us.
Right.
And that is Watch Out.
We're Mad.
Which, technically, when I came over, you were not necessarily humming the...
I had Dune Buggy, and I had the 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, 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 boom. Because you know what? That makes good, like, housekeeping music. You know what I'm saying?
It keeps you motivated and mm-hmm. moving.
And then all of a sudden, come on, me along the Dune Buggy. Wah, 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 wah. I'm sweeping up. I'm having a good time. And then all of a sudden, maybe the cat will do something, and I'll be like, you know, Bud Spencer it. So
you can kind of tell the day you're going, you're having gauged by, are you at a Terrence Hill or mm-hmm. are you at a Bud Spencer? Are you ready to engage the day?
Right.
Jump or, around, use your surroundings or and
be,
adapt.
Or be like,
begrudgingly getting through it. But if you adapt one of them, it's still adapting.
Right.
So there's no wrong choice.
Survive and thrive.
And that's something to be said with off-brand April is our ability to explore the genres outside of horror.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times, stuff that we couldn't necessarily argue, saying something was horror adjacent. And I mention that because this week's entry is your contribution
mm-hmm.
to off-brand April in the movie that I have not seen before. And based on my baggage, and the baggage is minimal with the movie itself, it goes beyond just the VHS cover and assumptions. And I had assumptions that somehow or another, Roseanne Barr made a deal with the devil to get back at Ed Begley Jr. and Meryl Streep.
Oh, so you thought there was more supernatural shenanigans.
I was wondering why we couldn't just... like
do it for a horror anyway. Anyway, right?
Yeah. Why off-brand April? So that's the baggage I had going in with this
one. Nice!
Exactly. Because I think throughout the film, I kept turning to you and going, this wasn't what I was expecting. And that being said, we always like to go in our experience with these films. What was it that made this particular one? Because last year, you brought in...
UHF, the banger.
It was, of course.
Open up strong. Right.
So why go with the second one with She-Devil?
I used to watch this all the time on Showtime. Mm-hmm. It would just play constantly. And it was the one where it was the kind of movie where like, oh, I've seen it before. I enjoy it. I can put it on the background. I could have done anything. And I also had it on not the Magic Mixtape,
which UHF came from.
Right. But one of the other ones, because, you know, you had more than one of three movies in a row.
But it was one that you would go back to on a more consistent basis. Mm-hmm.
So it was one of the ones where like, okay, I'll put it on and let those three movies play because I like it. Probably one of them was fucking Garbage Pail Kids or some shit like that, you know? So it was just one of those ones where I could like, not necessarily quote it, but I remember like, I know where all the jokes are coming in and they would be funny. And the thing about it is, like, on this viewing, like, again, I would know when they're coming in, but it also took a different, like, route, because when I watched this, I was, like, literally, it was when it was coming out. So I was maybe, like, 10, 11.
So did you see this theatrically initially?
I can't remember if I did or not, but I remember seeing it on the Showtime.
So, okay, that's
fine. On the show, on the cables, because I remember having to flip the little cable box.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I would watch it, and some of the jokes would go over my head because I'm 11 or 12. This is an adult movie, but at the same time, it's so cartoony and so campy and so ridiculous where you could get the joke, mm-hmm. you know, but it was just I haven't seen this movie in about 20 odd years. So I was always extremely nervous, especially like, you know, when doing Off-Brand Apple, or I'm sure a lot of you out there have a movie where you're like, I'm going to show it to my friend for the first time. I hope they like it, you know, because I haven't seen it in a long fucking time. And I remember liking it.
And that's the problem when you haven't vetted it in quite some time. And we understand the danger of the nostalgia rimmed glasses and how that can distort things.
Yeah.
But we also recognize just the baggage changes. And I think because I'd like to say we're more mature now.
We're more seasoned.
Yes. That I know going in, and I will say from the get-go, from the logo,
it's a cartoon hand-drawn Cupid cherub shit.
And Orion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Orion.
So the combination of the Orion logo, old school, along with hand-drawn animation and a title with the She-Devil. And I was like, I even mentioned, I was like, oh, that was nice.
Well, you know you're in least decent hands with Orion. You know what I'm saying? Not all are bangers.
No.
But there's a lot of good ones. So you're like, okay, I'm going to be entertained.
Yes.
Orion is like almost Latin for entertainment.
Even nowadays, I believe it
Quid
was.
Quid est not Orionis?
I believe it was Anna and the Apocalypse was one of the ones that Orion had a recent say-so. So even contemporary films have that logo, and immediately it installs the nostalgia.
A level of comfort.
And some confidence.
Yeah.
Going, okay, we should be entertained. And I will tell you this, genius, as a first-time viewing, based on what I anticipated the movie to be, turning out to what it was, pleasantly surprised.
Nice.
And all throughout the movie, I'm thinking, I always usually like to think what I would pair it with, what could it work as like a triple feature. And this one worked in so many ways. And the most obvious example was something we've covered on the film, or the show before, and the fact that twice now we can talk Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
There are some genre actors out there, like horror royalty, maybe we haven't covered two of their films, yet somehow the second time we're going to be talking Meryl Streep. But let's go ahead, address the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you even mentioned when we were talking about programming the month, because when you mentioned She-Devil, I'm like, well.
And I'm like, I have some reservations as well, you know.
So that is to say, we are cognizant. And more than anything, we've been around to kind of see her from her comic beginnings to now persona non grata.
Right. From her humble Roseanne Barr days to her domestic goddess days to Roseanne Arnold days to just Roseanne days to now infamous Roseanne days. So I think we should probably keep it at Arnold levels or down. We can appreciate what she's done, but not condone what she's doing.
And filmmaking is a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. That is one of the things. But we always kind of want to recognize the fact that some people might be turned off. But this
we at Nightmare Junkin do not condone the words of anyone we talk about.
And if we ever get to saying, like, take me out to the ball game, we will not grab our crotches and spit afterwards.
No.
You remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I remember the fervor. I remember the uproar.
I remember
seeing everything.
I remember seeing early bits of her stand-up via the Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian special.
Do you know how I was introduced by Roseanne? So before the Connors, before Roseanne's show, probably after her Rodney stuff, I remember my first concert was Julio Iglesias. I was with my mom, my grandma, and my aunt.
That's pretty classy, actually.
I was about 6 years old, and the opening act was Roseanne Barr. So they had a stand-up comedian act.
Okay, now hold on. Julio Iglesias.
And Roseanne Barr.
what audience do they think is coming to a Julio Iglesias show that Roseanne Barr would be the appropriate opener?
Domestic housewives, or I guess.
Okay, no, like, that's fair. That's fair. That's a good turn.
It
okay.
was at Sandstone. So,
oh, wow.
Right? But it wasn't. It wasn't just domestic housewives. Everybody was there for Julio Iglesias. It was all the gente. So it was all, it was, right? And I remember my grandma even was like, you know, who is this? Like, get this woman off. I'm here to see Julio. I don't give a shit about this guy, right? And I remember, so Roseanne comes out. And for those of you who don't really know, she's kind of a filthy fucking comedian back in the day. And she was kind of fucking filthy there. I remember, I don't remember a lot of it because I remember like my mom or my grandma trying to like distract me, like talking to me. Like, I don't hear the jokes. Meanwhile, I'm like, I don't like jokes. I want to hear shit.
I'm sure you're hearing other people react as well.
Right. And so everybody's laughing. And I'm like, well, I want to laugh too. Right. I like to laugh even at that age. But they're like, oh, no, no, no. The joke, the one joke that I remember that just made my grandma's face like, rah, just kind of like snarl up, like, rah, just made mad.
Did she gave him the Bud Spencer?
Mm-hmm. Made my mom kind of giggle. And it's the one that I think it was the first one where before, like, oh, don't earmuffs, right? It was before that. Was like, she said something, the best thing about having sex with a bald man is you have some place to put your chewing gum. And like, that was the one that. That was the one that gave my grandma the vapors, and I remember it, and my mom was like, oh, and like, you gotta cover the hit. And I was like, I don't get it. And I looked him over my aunt's like, I don't get it either, right? And so
that's a nice memory, man. Yeah, that is something to be shared. So that was your initial exposure then.
Mm-hmm.
So then,
because I never really watched the Roseanne show. I mean, I watched a couple of episodes,
but
I mean,
aware of it though.
Absolutely, like so you were like the Halloween specials, like those were cool. So I'd watch those, right? Because they're Halloween specials.
But was there ever? So were you ever? Were you presently or ever aware of the fact that? Oh yeah, that's that lady from the Julio show.
Oh, all the time.
Okay,
all the time, because like. Especially when she'd show up like that. And well, like, oh, it's her, right?
And Freddy's Dead.
Mm-hmm. When she was Roseanne Arnold.
Yes.
Yeah. So, no, growing up in the late 80s, there was a lot of celebrities you couldn't help but know.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you didn't watch their TV show, they were still all over the place, especially the ones that were up to shenanigans. Because she was like up to shenanigans since then. But before that, she attempted her hand at movie making, and we got this cinematic fucking delight.
And this is her feature film debut,
mm-hmm.
of which she is again co. And I will say this: I think the strength of the Roseanne show. I'm not saying it isn't all Roseanne Barr, her creative input, you know, starring all that, but surrounding herself with really good actors.
Well, because like, yes, this is Roseanne's show. She's the title character, but for me. Back in the day and in this viewing, this is Meryl Streep's show.
100%.
This is her movie, and she gets to be goofy.
And there were, at certain points, just kind of writing notes where I'm like, bed meltdown, and just these little physical, sometimes subtle things that she would do that just added to the Looney Tunes lunacy.
The level of over the top.
But it's still fairly subtle.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think you mentioned it, and this is maybe the best place to start with this one, is the overall aesthetic of this movie, the way it's shot, the score, Howard Shore, first Rick Dalton moment.
Classy.
And cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
And sexy. And
over the top.
Hitting all the right notes. But the camp factor in this film.
This could be the rich side of Baltimore. Of John Waters' Baltimore, because he's always like looking at the trashy side. This is the other side of the tracks where everybody's like affluent and shit, but it's still slimy.
It's the
campy and wild.
It was the production design, and I'm talking from the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
from everything in the house.
But PG-13 wild.
And then in the mansion.
Yeah.
Just
Barbie's Malibu Dream House.
Pepto everywhere. I'm talking blush. I'm talking bashful. And it was so over the top. And with every moment where, like, moments and so much levity, this movie was legit funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Meryl Streep in this film, from her drawl She
the way she's just like, I can't even believe that we're gonna do this now. Over the top romantic act, the way, like,
and we don't get to talk about, and not,
she's so fucking funny.
No,
between this and Death Becomes Her, she's so underrated as a comedic actress. I'm glad she's like, yeah, I'll fucking do horror and be silly. Yeah, I'll do this little take on rom-com, because we're first introduced her and it's like she's like a next to somebody riding down the beach Fabio style. We're introduced to her proper by Robin Leach of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. How's that for a fucking age of demarcation?
So this film came out in 1989, which means it's 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been about 13 seeing this. Again, you were about, we were young when we saw this, but even then I was ever present and aware of Robin Leach.
Mm-hmm.
I was ever present and aware of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yep.
And so when we open with that, instant we looked at each other like, well, shit, how many people, if they go back to this film,
the kids ain't gonna know who that is.
This was technically like YouTube before YouTube.
This was like MTV Cribs.
Yes, it was.
We're over here in the home of megastar Kim Basinger, right? And just like,
you do a good Robin Leach, man. We got to put that on the Jeopardy board or the Hollywood Square, Horrorwood Squares. Yeah, so that was good in and of itself. But then the fact that we also now have Ed Begley Jr. and
getting all of it in this movie, showing his all in this.
We get the Begley bare ass Begley, him banging.
He's got multiple sex scenes in this movie. For a PG-13 movie, this movie is ribald.
It's great because we just came off a screening of Samurai Cop that has multiple sex scenes as well. Fairly chaste next to that, but...
But still.
But indeed.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I've kind of got a really growing appreciation for his work based on the people that he's like collaborated with. Also, the fact that a couple of first-time viewings I've taken in over on Patreon, I do the whole like 3 first-time movie watches a week. He's involved in the film Cockfighter.
Oh, yeah? With Warren Oates?
Warren Oates! And also in the film Cat People.
Oh, yeah? The Randy one?
Mm-hmm.
But he's also shows up as like hobos in different movies. He's just a good character actor because he can be goofy and silly or serious. Look at him in Arrested Development.
Yep.
You know? And then look at him in like Law and Order, you know? So like, he's just a good character actor, which makes him like, okay, cool. When you see him on screen, it's like, it's that guy. I'm in good hands.
And he's also admittedly looking good in the buff.
Mm-hmm.
He's
getting all the ass in town. He plays the sleaziest dude in the Tri-State area. You don't root for any of the characters in this movie except for Roseanne. She's definitely our hero disrespectful.
You know the other person I was rooting for?
The dog?
No.
And the kids?
Oh, my God.
Grandma?
We'll get to them. No. Because with last week, we got Ann Donald Pleasance.
Oh, yeah.
This week, we get
Ann Linda Hunt.
Hells yes.
Mm-hmm.
And another possible line of demarcation in terms of aging, I am familiar with her work through a number of places, but my most wonderful memory is seeing a little film called, hold on, I can't remember it now. It's escaping me.
I remember Linda Hunt from NCIS.
See, and The Year of Living Dangerously was one of them, but no, this is
Mosquito
the one.
Mosquito Coast.
The problem is, it's the same film as Never Too Young to Die.
Stargrown, defying in the danger zone.
But it is, hold on, this is so embarrassing now, because I actually legit loved it. If Looks Could Kill.
Oh, yeah, with Richard Grieco?
With Richard Grieco, yes. So I am familiar. She's in Kindergarten Cop. She is that actor.
Mm-hmm. So she's the one that was based on Edna Mode in The Incredibles.
It shows. You hear it. You see it. And again, you're surrounding Roseanne Barr with amazing character actors. So from John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf to Ed Begley Jr., Meryl Streep and Linda Hunt, it's a pretty decent handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the cartoony shenanigans, of which there are plenty. And I'm looking at back. Oh, Things I didn't know I was going to be hearing. Roseanne reading smut. Roseanne reading ribald tales. And it made me think, do we need the Roseanne ASMR?
Where it was like, and then we're going to, and as her legs wrapped around his viney thorns, once he spent the love nectar. And I remember even in like when at 10, 11, I was like, right? Because there's just in the, because it's PG-13, so they can't get too dirty with it.
Nope.
But they fucking try their best.
Ever on the precipice.
Right? Like even later on when like their sex scenes, they're just rolling around cartoony style in sheets. And the kid popping milk. Pop, 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 pop.
That was wonderful. But hey, by the way, Yelp.
Two Yelp reviews.
Oh, man. We
have a Yelp for gerbils, and we have a Yelp for dog.
Oh.
But the dog's done in like, in the good way, it's cartoonish
enough.
It's cartoonish enough, and you don't see any aftermath, except it reminds me of The Simpsons when Ralph dies, and like when he's like, looks like it's up to Ralph. And then, boom, the next thing you know, you hear like the church bells, and you see like Ralph's headstone. That's basically what happens to the dog, and the headstone's ridiculous. That's the thing. It's not funny because we don't condone like doggies, but at the same time,
we're coming off of a screening of The Activated Man,
right?
Which
is the whole story in itself.
And maybe that's why we're able to. No, you know why we were able to giggle? Because this is not to be taken seriously.
It's tunes. That's what it is.
But
it's tunes.
It was great to watch you come to realize, oh shit, we're gonna have to give a Yelp review. And I looked at it, I was like, good Lord, man.
Because it just came after, like, not but 20 minutes earlier, is like a wrap being made in macaroni and cheese. The poor gerbil.
That would have been the mushroom casserole.
And then splattered on that kid's face. Oh.
So the kids.
There's giggles. Okay, in this movie.
Let's talk the kids. Because
the kids are fucking awful.
The kids reminded me of John Waters kind of kids, mm-hmm. especially the daughter, and especially her need to be maybe older than she is, as when she finally gets to the mansion, the first scene, she's laying out there in the bikini, tempting the pool guy, who's a whole nother thing. Do we say 1989 another time?
Another place. Yeah. He's over there doing his best Antonio Bender. Oish.
But then there's that tell all people interview that's going on, and the photographer in the background, she's modeling for him. And then it escalates with her basically doing some dirty dancing with the pool guy.
Meanwhile, so the little boy's journey, he's just a shit. Like I said, popping milk in the...
That killed me.
I totally remember. That's when things started snapping, because I was like, my comedy Spidey sense
like,
is.
Hey,
I'm like, here's something funny. I remember this, and then it has come back. Right? So... Those kids, he's popping over the milk, he's getting drunk, he's like 10, 11 years old, just bad kid, hanging out with the grandma.
The grandma was one
of the MVPs for me. You know, she was in Wall Street, she was in the Fun House, she was,
you know who she was in Tobey Hooper?
You know who she was in the Fun House?
Which one?
She was the fortune teller that,
good on her.
Yeah.
Good on her. Yeah. Sylvia Miles kills it in this film. And
every time she's on screen, I just giggle.
Once she's off the meds
the older people are activated.
Dude, senior soccer, that whole thing. It's like kick the can.
Everything that Roseanne does is sinister, but it's wholesome. It's this wholesome. It does wholesome things to a sinister end. She's doing it on bad intentions, but she's doing good. So you can root for her, you know? She's just doing this to ruin this dude's life. But everything she does actually helps a lot of people. She starts small with, like, Linda Hunt's character, and then just opens up this fucking monopoly of, like, pro-women's employment agency.
The movie felt kind of a little Fight Club-y to me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It also felt a little... oh my God, the Norm Macdonald film where they do the revenge for hire.
Dirty Work.
It felt a little bit of that.
But imagine how progressive it was when that was coming out in 1989.
Well, back then with Roseanne Barr, she was the domestic goddess.
Mm-hmm.
She was this figurehead in the house.
Women's empowerment.
Yes. And man.
And the little guys.
Yeah.
You know,
she was the common person.
Exactly. The common person's like domestic champion. And this movie was a good showcase for
it really
her
was.
Because she shows that she is just put upon from the word get. And like, and it opens up with like society's pressure on people to look beautiful and their best. Mm-hmm. And so you're already sympathizing and you can feel for this person because no matter what, you're like, oh man, I got to look good for to be out and about, you know? So you're already rooting for her. And then just to see her being put upon by this terrible man. And that's why I'm glad it's over the top and campy because these people deserve the terrible shit that they deserves the comeuppance, like house exploding and everything.
She deserves her revenge and we deserve to die.
Yeah.
Because it very much has her kill list 5.
Because it's a cartoon. It's Kill Bill meets the Roseanne Show meets Looney Tunes. Or not even Looney Tunes, like it's more like a Hanna-Barbera where there's goofy shenanigans but not eyeballs bulging out and shit.
There's multiple montages
mm-hmm.
where they, a Revenge of the Nerds says, open your eyes, where they're bettering the building they just they bought.
Right.
You've got the destruction of the house montage.
That was a great montage.
All this ill shit you're not supposed to do with modern technology, she did in that. And the casual walking away, green screen for 89, it's fine. But the actual
explosion was nice.
Woo, that was legit.
It was a fun explosion.
That was legit. I mean, impressed with it.
That's one of the things that stuck out to me from growing up was like all the terrible shit. It was almost like a PSA, like, don't do this or this will happen to you. You know? So
was Billy Smith tree climbing a thing across mm-hmm. the way?
You learned electrical safety by accident. And so... No, but because she's putting aerosol cans in the microwave and fucking irons in the washing machine and just like all this terrible shit. And I'm like, okay, nice. And then I remember I saw you worried for the dog and I'm like, okay, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. They're not going to go that far yet.
Yet. But yet the dog that does survive, the one that makes it through, also throws in another element of Waters-esque shenanigans when it comes to a little foot licking. And I don't know if the sun will come out tomorrow, but it inspires the dirty dream.
It is, but she's just having this filthy dream and like, oh.
She's being inspired again. The muse was calling.
And next thing you know, she wakes up and the dog's licking her feet. And I'm like, ah!
And maybe just because we're fresh off of Serial Mom from Madness.
It
so.
Was just hilarious because like, it's funny. It's jokes. It's comedy. And like just with cartoonish goofiness, those what if scenarios, you know, instant family with somebody rich. Because Meryl Streep is just so over the top.
She also becomes put upon. And when
to see her devolve.
Yes. And that's, you mentioned it's her movie. It's her journey. It is supposed to be Roseanne. Yeah. Roseanne is off, basically operating on the periphery.
She's Machiavellian like, that shit. You know, she's great. Just watching her revenge
and
play out.
And the putting together of their organization, the rose pin that mm-hmm. you see, and the stuff that she's able to then influence from the inside, it's wonderful. And it's something that I truly appreciate now with my baggage going in with something like this, where I'm seeing all these other films that would pair well with this, but this one did it not early on enough, but like you said, with Roseanne as kind of the figurehead of your film. Also directed by Susan Seidelman,
mm-hmm.
which when that pulled up, I was like, I know the name. Who do I know that from? And it turns out she has directed a number of things that you might be familiar with, but most prominently, Desperately Seeking Susan.
Mm-hmm. And she also did a couple of the episodes for Sex and the City and... She's done the movie about the Smithereens.
But needless to say, I mean, Desperately Seeking Susan is currency in the 1980s, mm-hmm. based on everyone involved, based on the premise of the film. And anytime you mention Madonna,
it comes up in that.
It's good. It's mm-hmm. good. It's good.
But she has this eye for, like, the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
She makes it feel just so over the top. Where again, like we're introduced on people on white knight and on white horses coming down beaches, and like all the like oh, 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 when Mary's theme, and it just gets progressively worse, and then just
and the Howard Shore score,
It's Wicked Shenanigans.
He was channeling a little Carl Stalling, a little Raymond Scott, but he also, there were serious, somber notes that were hit.
And then incontinence.
Okay, the senior director and her insistence on the incontinence and the severity of it, and that that was a long Kong and a long soak in this, or sustained soak, however you want to look at it. It's delicious. It is so mean and wonderful. This is one of those that I'm shocked doesn't necessarily have a bigger audience, because I, again, was just familiar via the VHS cover, but I had no real desire to seek it out based on Roseanne.
Right.
And Mara, so.
Right. And like, I'm growing up 9, 10 years old, 11 years old. I'm not like, ooh, Meryl Streep, you know? The only thing I knew about her and like was at that time was dingoes eating her babies. And I don't even know if that was really her at the time. So like, I didn't give a shit.
You responded to the cartoonishness of it.
Exactly. I just caught it on TV and I was like, this is goofy.
And it's the dirty jokes lady.
I like it. It's the right? And so it's the dog licking the feet, the little boy popping the milk.
And then the little boy partying, drinking the champagne with the grandma.
And the grandma cracked me up back then and cracked me up this time too. Just
she's foul-mouthed.
Her extremely foul-mouthed. And she's like, my daughter, she was a bitch in the town slut. And I hate her guts.
Dishing the dirt
to People magazine, and she's like, oh, there was a baby involved, right?
And that entire sequence where it's almost like a split diopter with her in the foreground with the interview, and like I said, with the guy photographing the daughter, that's when I think the movie kind of had me, but that's when it just delved into that kind of weirdness. I'm like, oh, okay, this is that other block just outside of John Waters' Baltimore
era.
Yeah,
it's the rich part of town.
It's just adjacent, yeah.
Right? It's like Baltimore Hills.
They're striving to get up there.
Right? And so, and then you see like Meryl Streep being turned down by the ones that... amorous pool boy when he's over there in the when we see the pool boy's
his
lair,
room his is lair. A lair. It is a lair.
There's like animal prints and he's over there like ooh, ooh, on the Bowflex, and then just like that sexual come up and then slam, and just her trying to do the laundry, just her world falling apart while everybody, you put these horrible people in this like fantasy Barbie's Malibu dream house and just watch it fucking crumble.
Well, even the best part was eventually, by the time we get to the end, her dresses has changed, her demeanor has changed.
Her books have changed.
And we go from all that pink, the blush and bashful, to like very stark black and white, a changed experience.
Well, she's over there writing about love and the spin cycle. And everybody was talking about, like, nobody's going to relate to a romance with a guy named Bob, right? And then she's like, well, I have to write about what I've known. And then she goes, they even said, like, the sex scenes are hot, but, like, the story is stupid. Because she's like, as she put upon her the spin cycle and the vibrations and shit like that. And they're like, what?
So here's the thing. If I would have caught this in the theater, that would have been the second year in a row I would have heard a spin cycle gag, because the Great Outdoors.
Great Outdoors.
You came out the year before.
You ever seen Wider Lines? And so
that one way over my head growing up, but now I'm like, oh, hey.
That one went over my head growing up, but I also knew like something dirty, ain't it? And so I'm giggling along.
Forever in Ash.
Right? And so that's why this is kind of like, because I knew that there was some dirty shit going on. I knew it was ribald, but it was chaste enough where nobody would be like, oh my God, you know, but just like, oh,
so
this is kind of
gateway,
dirty.
But gateway to what?
More ribald humor.
Okay.
But it's also like a revenge plot.
It is a revenge movie.
But it's also so wholesome as well. Like the good things that she does in a very bad way.
So is this like your gateway to Miss 45? Your eventual transition to the revenge movies? The put upon usual female protagonist?
Maybe.
Like legitimately, because if you look at this, the way it breaks down.
She has her kill list.
And she has been wronged. Mm-hmm. She does a number of things to prepare and practice for the eventual carrying out of the plan.
But she doesn't use a weapon at all. She just uses her wits and her gumption.
Mm-hmm. And empowering others. Again, a great gateway, because then eventually you get to something else, into something else, into something else.
She had to level up. First, she starts off with Linda Hunt's and sweets.
And I loved their back and forth. Eating the sweets. Hells yeah.
Yeah. That was a cool little scene, because Linda Hunt comes like, oh, what, you got sweets over there? Well, and I'm the same way. You can win me over with baked sweets. Goods.
Oh, dude, are you kidding?
The sweets and baked goods, yep.
Now, I think the surprises I had were equal to the fun that I was having. And coming from last week with something that is just unabashedly cartoonish to something that was a little bit more subtly cartoonish, because it's not over the top,
right?
But it carries itself very well. This is one of those I can see that would have played on HBO. This was the Showtime one.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those I think I would have really dug back in the day. And I think it's because of the fact that it's, I'm not going to say very well balanced, but it does actually feel pretty balanced for something that is ostensibly just a standard revenge comedy.
Yeah. But it's, like you said, it's done in just this family-friendly, more accessible way, and it's carried on the back of the three main leads, mm-hmm. because if you didn't want to boo and hiss every time Ed Begley Jr. does terrible shit, you know?
Which is quite a bit.
Even when he's yelling at her and you see Chekhov's ring that comes into play with the Xerox pictures, it's, again, something for Meryl Streep to lose her shit over, and just to see her go from this, a pomp and circumstance, to like, get the hell out of my house! You know, just...
She has the kids in a headlock at one point.
She's grabbing them.
She's doing the middle finger thing with the glasses.
Yeah.
She is a spectacle. She is a treasure. There's a reason she is celebrated. I love it
mm-hmm.
when they get to slum it.
When they get to, like, goof around, right?
The comedy? Okay, cool, let's do it. You know, horror with Zemeckis and weird special effects? Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you populate those films, though, with the appropriate collaborators and artists, and then you get something like this.
Well, because we talk about intent, too. I think it was intent to make a fun story and an empowering story. Because, like we said earlier, this is pretty fucking progressive for 89.
That's what Desperately Seeking Susan is.
Right? So, just like, hey, I think I know why this movie tanked at the box office. Because nobody talks about it. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody says, I'm glad it's getting like a cult following now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't see it in the theater. It got big on Showtime. But I think because it's fun, it's lighthearted, but it's also mean-spirited lighthearted. It's we're talking how like nice and wholesome it is, but at the same time, this is Roseanne, and there's some vile, mean shit that goes on in this movie.
And I enjoyed every bit of it.
Me too.
This was a really nice surprise. I assumed there would be devilish shenanigans. I assumed somehow she would sprout some horns.
Welcome to hell.
Didn't get that. Even at the very end. Even when we got the title of the film.
Yeah, because like, it was like, yay! Because he was like, these are the things that are important to me. My like home, my family, mm-hmm. my career, my freedom. And then you're a she-devil. Yay! And then at the end, when you see the red glint, just like a hint of like, it not was, necessarily.
Like a little evil Ed.
Right?
That's the only taste you get. This is purely non-supernatural.
But every now and then you'd see images of her like at the end when like fire comes out of nowhere and she's like...
You know what? That's all style, man.
Yeah, because it adds to the cartoon charm.
Well, you mentioned it. It opens with animation.
Mm-hmm.
So it lets you know right away, this is what we're going to open with. And then when we close, when we go from Robin Leach to closing... Holy shnikes, I about jumped out of my seat.
To the red glasses, Sally Jesse Raphael.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another age of demarcation.
But at least that's going to be a little bit younger, or skew younger possibly, because Robin Leach was
in
the
80s. By like 2 years, though.
I would say late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, like only by 2 years.
I'm being generous. But it was really nice to see her in this mm-hmm. film, and closing out classy, as she always did.
Yeah.
Just the queen of the talk show circuits.
And that's the thing. This movie had an era class when you had Meryl Streep. Because at that time, she had won an Oscar, I believe. Or something like that. She was known. And not by 10-year-old Jay, though. So, but... And then you had Roseanne, who's this up-and-coming comic. This is before the show. And then you had character actor Ed Begley Jr. You put them all in this wacky, well-directed, well-intended... They wanted to tell a story about female revenge and empowerment overall without being blood and guts and gore. You
and
know?
Hitting you over the head.
Exactly. And be funny. And this campy cartoon. because sugar makes the medicine go down easier. And so when you can make it funny and entertaining, the message can come across a little bit more as opposed to like commanding things.
Yeah, so we,
and I think that's why it hit me at a young age. Like, oh, okay, cool. I don't cheat. You know, I don't want shit to go down like that.
Guy, yeah.
I don't want to spur anybody so bad where they have that much resentment to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a good thing.
A lesson learned.
Exactly. I think that's why I've always enjoyed this movie, because it's cartoony.
Well, and that go back to that, because the fact that we always kind of like to say if something hits both sides, it's the frosted, shredded mini wheats.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it as a young genius, being 20 some odd years since you've seen it now, you know, the resonation, because like going back to Running Scared, it hit me a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Based on my current baggage, based on my interaction, still legit love the shit out of it, but it was different. So looking back on this one, good different, bad different, mid different.
Oh, good different.
Good different.
I got a lot. I mean, I still got the same overall message and I still laughed at the same cartoon parts, but I got a lot of more of the hidden innuendo. You know, I got more appreciation of Meryl Streep's acting, because back in the day when I first saw it, I thought it was funny. I thought she was just being goofy, mm-hmm. You know, and now looking back, she is. It is still funny, but I see more what she's going for, mm-hmm. What more of her inspirations are, or more of like how much of acting she's doing, like the little subtler things.
Oh.
So that was a pleasant surprise. I got more of what Roseanne's plight was, because I'm like, back then I was like, yeah, she's cold, right? But now I'm like, damn, she's cold, but it's a justifiable cold.
I can understand.
You know, I dig in more.
Yep.
And Ed Begley Jr., I was like, okay, he's a scumbag, but now I'm like, man, he's a real fucking scumbag. So my appreciation for this movie has grown, you know?
Yeah.
It's super fucking dated. I mean, extremely dated, but I think the... Again, because the intent is there and because it's populated with people who get the assignment and perform at a good level, mm-hmm. and a great level, I think that's why it's getting this some sort of resurgence, and maybe it can hopefully find another audience, like up in people nowadays.
Well, we caught this one on Tubi, mm-hmm. So as I like to say on the I've Seen That Challenge, Tubi or not Tubi, yeah, Tubi on this one. This one was a blast. And honestly, off-brand April has been wonderfully pleasant as we sandwich it in between two kind of our busiest times in a lot of ways, as we always will have Into the Mouth of March Madness.
Right.
Again, shout out to Nightmare on Elm Street.
And then Panic
and
Fest.
And Panic Fest. So that is to say, we're actually
going
to be
taking... Shout out to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yep. So that is to say, we're actually going to be taking next week off as we prepare the stuff for Panic Fest. And I'm just going to say this right in advance. My apologies for some of the sound issues. If anything, we're on brand.
It happens.
That is to say... We talk about intent, right?
Right.
Intent's always there. But honestly, man, this was very much needed as a first-time viewing, and I'm glad it kind of hit all the right notes and then a few new ones for
mm-hmm.
you. So until we start to panic, this is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
And we'll see you in your dreams.